God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. Newcomers, is there anyone here in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you. You are able to unmute currently. Slide through and see if I see anybody. All right. All righty. This is the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. Format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. And this evening we'll be discussing step 4, part 2. Please welcome our panel. We have Jen and Mike. Thank you both for coming out. And what I'll do here is share my screen in a second, and I will read a paragraph or two, and each of our panel will share. I forgot to tell y'all the battle for who's first, so I'm gonna just go ahead and select Mike to go first. So the first reading will be on page 67. Step 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Notice that the word fear is bracketed alongside the difficulties with Mr. Brown, Mrs. Jones, the employer, and the wife. This short word somehow touches about every aspect of our lives. It was an evil and corroding thread. The fabric of our existence was shot through with it. It set in motion trains of circumstances which brought us misfortune we felt we didn't deserve. But did not we ourselves set the ball rolling? Sometimes we think fear ought to be classed with stealing. It seems to cause more trouble. Right, Mike?
There we go. Hey, everybody. I'm Mike. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date's January 7, 2008. My home group's 49th Street Living Sober. We meet on Thursdays at 5:30. And my sponsor doesn't know who I am on the phone. So we're just going to go with that because I just talked to him and he didn't know it was me. So we'll just go with that. This little tiny word, fear. I do remember before I started drinking that I was afraid of everything. I mean, scared to death. I was scared of my parents. You know, how could I bring a bad grade into this house? How could I disappoint them? And, you know, looking back on it, they wouldn't have cared. They wouldn't have cared at all. But I was scared to death to tell them I was not doing well in school, in some part, because I liked school. And it was math, and it was killing me, and I couldn't tell them, and I was scared to death. I also, I was scared, honest to God, scared to death of the opposite sex to no end. I never thought I would... How do you get a girlfriend when you can't speak to a girl that's looking right at you in class? How can you get a girlfriend when you can't, I mean, you're not going to call anybody on the phone when you sure can't pick up the phone and talk to them, you know, and later we're going to talk about sex and all that stuff. I was like, dear God, if I ever have sex, it's going to be a miracle. And, you know, and I was scared of everything. And then it happened when I was a senior in high school. I was a baby. I was 16. I was in high school. I was a senior. I was 16. I was immature. So that probably had a lot to do with all these fears. But then I found it. I found the magic. I found the drink. And it wasn't that I drank all the time yet. I drank for 29 years. I drank till I was 45. So I had a lot of, you know, a lot of drinking still to do. But man, fear was not a word that I knew for the next 20, whatever years that is, 29. I got arrested twice and nothing happened. I got arrested within 7 months time of each other, both on major holidays. I thought that's what you were supposed to do. You know, I got a DUI and a drunk in public, and I spent more time in jail with the drunk in public, more hours in jail, because it wasn't long, than with a DUI. Nothing happened. I went to court, nothing. I'm like, I'm Superman. This is, what are they going to do to me? There were at least five other times I met with police officers. Two times were very serious and nothing happened. I walked away. One of them said, go away. And I just left, you know, okay, bye. I was not afraid of, apparently, of spending money that I didn't have, because I went through a couple of wives' savings. I would had like 10 credit cards that would pay off each other. The last time I got, when I finally got sober, my second wife, who I'm still married to, I was like, you know, got a clear head. We sat down. I said, all right, let's go pay some bills. I'm straight now. She goes, dude, there's not a penny left. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Weren't you taking care of that? She said, no, man, not a bit. I wasn't afraid of my parents anymore, I thought. But I didn't realize that after I got really good and drunk into my drinking career, I never called them afternoon on any weekend. And I talked to my mom all the time, but I didn't know that I didn't want them to hear me slurring and telling the same story all over again and all that. I wasn't afraid of losing my job. I was going, you know, a lot of you know me. I still teach school. I was teaching for 36 years. I'd show up most days, you know, a lot of Fridays and Mondays I'd call a sub, but I was still there. I wasn't afraid of losing that job at all. There I was. I'm, you know, woohoo. I wasn't afraid. I have three kids. I wasn't afraid. I was the cool dad. I thought, you know, I'm not afraid of disappointing them. They know I'll be there, you know, and we'll get to, you know, my wife, she knew what she was getting into. Both of them did, you know, and that's my attitude. That's how I sounded. And I hate saying that out loud, because that sounds like just a turd right now, but that's the way it was. I didn't care. And I don't know why I didn't care. I wasn't raised that way or anything. So then we get sober and I get to this step and I do this inventory and everything says fear. Every single thing that I said I wasn't afraid of, I'm afraid of. I would have died if I'd gotten arrested for real. I'd have lost the job for real. I did go bankrupt once. I was on the way twice, but I was scared to death when I did this inventory of not having any money and to be able to support my wife and kids. I was scared to death of it. I was scared of how I treated my two oldest girls, and I'll talk about them later. And, you know, and definitely my wife, I was scared to death when I got sober, when I realized what I had done, the things I had done, that I was scared of everything. But now I've got it right. An inventory on this, a fearless moral inventory. How am I going to do this when I'm scared of everything? You know, can I just say, I got sober, I'm good. We'll just leave it at that, you know, because I don't want to do this at all. I'm scared to do this part. And what it was when I was drinking, my solution was oblivion. Let's just get so drunk, I have no clue what's going on. And why would I be afraid of anything? Half the time I was in a black. I didn't know what was going on. But now I'm sober. And I'm going to have to sit down and write this fear inventory that I'm scared to death of. And then in the next paragraph, it'll talk about, I'm going to get some help with this. So with that, I'll pass.
Thanks, Mike. Jen?
Thanks, Mike. So I'm Jen, I'm an alcoholic. My sober date is July 20th, 2005. I was young when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. I was 25. And I remember listening to people talking about their fears at meetings, like when I first came in. And I was like, what the hell is wrong with these people? I'm not afraid. So if you're out there and you don't think you're afraid, that's okay. You're exactly where you need to be, because it took me a lot of time to recognize my fear and fears that I had. One of the things that this brings me back to is, and it's my sponsorship, thank God, because ever since I was very, very little, like I can't even give you an age, but I always remember feeling like I had a football in my stomach, always feeling uncomfortable. Everywhere I went, I was, I always felt like I was born in the wrong decade. I was in the wrong place. I was with the wrong people. Things would be better over there. And I had no idea that that was fear. I had no idea that that's what was running that. And it took me, thank God, I got in with a sponsor who found the chink in my armor. Because when it came to writing the fourth, my first fourth, there was a lot of, I don't know why I'm so good and everybody else is so bad. I don't know, you know, why they're doing this to me. I just keep giving them chances. I don't know what I'm afraid of, you know, and it took talking to my sponsor about things. And I'd say, oh, I'm so mad. And because I only had a couple of feelings, mad and happy. I was up here where only the dogs could hear me, or down here lower than whale shit. That's what my emotional range was. And so she'd say, okay, well, talk to me about it. Tell me about it. And I tell her the story and she'd say, you know, I'd be a little afraid. Oh, really? Why would you be afraid? And she'd say, well, I'd be afraid that, you know, they would ruin my reputation or they'd gossip about me. Oh, well, maybe that is what I'm feeling. So it took me a lot of time before I recognized fear and recognized that I had any fear. So I don't know if anybody can relate to that, but that's that was my experience with that. And then this reminded me of something else. I was doing my fear inventory another time with another person. And I said, I had fear of financial insecurity. And one of the things that this guy did was he asked me to track back to see where I could have created my own fear. And I didn't understand that. So I asked him to go through it with me. I said, yeah, I'm financially insecure. He said, okay, great. He goes, you got a car? I said, yeah. He goes, do you own it? And I said, no. He goes, well, are you paying it off? I said, yeah. He goes, okay, how much do you owe? I said, $18,000. He said, all right. You got a condo? Have you paid cash for it? No. Okay, how much do you owe? $185,000. And he looked at me, said, do you have a permanent job? And I said, no. And he goes, well, you're not afraid of financial insecurity. You are financially insecure. You've created that fear. Oh shit. You know, so, those were the two things that sort of came to mind when we're talking about fear right now. And we'll sort of, I'll get more into a little bit more about my life later on, but, take it away.
Thank you. Thank you both. All right. The next reading is on page 68. Oops. Ah, what am I doing here? There we go. Perhaps there is a better way. We think so, for we are now on a different basis, the basis of trusting and relying upon God. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. We are in the world to play the role he assigns. Just to the extent that we do as we think he would have us and humbly rely on him, does he enable us to match calamity with serenity? We never apologize to anyone for depending upon our Creator. We can laugh at those who think spirituality is a way of weakness. Paradoxically, it is the way of strength. The verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. We never apologize for God. Instead, we let him demonstrate through us what he can do. We ask him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what he would have us be. At once, we commence to outgrow fear. Mike?
Yeah, this part right here was a big, huge step in my sobriety right here, because It says fearless moral inventory. Okay. So I'm going to sit down and do this, and I'm scared to death of everything. And this is overwhelming. And I cannot do this by myself, because if I do, first, I'm not going to do it. And then if I sit down to do it, it's going to be just a list of resentments, because every one of those people harmed me. They hurt me. They did this to me. That's what's wrong with them. That's my list. Goodbye. But in this book right here, it says, I have a better way now. I have a basis of trusting God. I have to do that, because I have to turn this over. I have to rely on that higher power to take this away from Mike. This is, I need help, and I'm asking for help. And, you know, I've never had, this is what I thought. You know, I thought I never had faith in anything before, let alone a higher power or a God. But even to get to this point in AA, I had a lot of faith. You know, I had to have faith in you all before I could ever do AA. I was scared to death to come into meetings. There's the fear. Like, what do you want from me? Who are you? I don't want to be friends with any of you people. I'm going to pass in the night. I'm going to hide in the back. We're going to get some tips on how to drink like a gentleman. And we're going to move on from here. And, you know, I've said this before, my first meeting back from rehab, when they said, everybody in the room raise their hand who has more than a year of sobriety. Well, I'm just laughing because my wife's there, because she's not letting me get out of her sight yet. And 3/4 of the room raises their hand, and I'm in shock. I don't know why I'm in shock, because in rehab, nobody raises their hand, right? And I was just waiting for nobody to raise their hand. And I'm like, oh God, I'm in trouble, because these people take this seriously. They're not drinking at all. I was just like, you know, we're gonna figure out how to do this on the sly and get sober. But I had to have faith in all of you and believe you, that you weren't going to hurt me, that you didn't want anything from me, you know. And that sounds like a silly fear now that I've been in here a little bit. But man, when you're new, shit, parking the car and walking up from the street to the room is scary. It is. And you got to have faith that your feet are even going to move. And then before I had that faith in a higher power, I asked a guy to sponsor me. That's huge. I don't know him really. I hear him. It's something I want. You know, I've heard that, and he sounds very happy. And I don't think this is any surprise. I've had 2 sponsors in my journey. Both guys have been family guys with jobs and wives and you know, all of that, because I didn't know how to do that. I didn't know how to do that. You know, I drank from 16 to 45. I missed the adult lessons. I missed them all. I didn't know how to be a dad. I didn't know how to be a husband. I didn't know how to be a son. I didn't know how to be a friend. I didn't know any of that. I was a 16-year-old kid at 45. And I really was. When I finally, my last drink, I was still, let's roll, let's go crazy. And that's insane. But I had faith before I even knew I had faith. And then when I took that third step, when I turned my will and my life over to the care of God as I understood him, I was at a different place. I could sit and do this inventory. I could do it because it wasn't about me. It was finally knocking in my head. I have done so much wrong to other people, and I need to get that straight. And I just have to be sober. I'm finally realizing that I have to have faith in a higher power to go out and do this and make this list and, you know, put fear to the side and know that it's there, but count on that higher power. And it says, you know, faith means courage, and we don't shout it from the rooftops. And I wanted to, you know, hey, look at me, look what I did. And after a while, none of that matters, man. It's just people, it says it right in the book, people see how you act. And I'll talk about some more of that later. I don't have to say, hey, I've found this higher power. Hey, he helps me through the day. I hope it shows up in how I live. And I'll talk about that more later. Thanks.
Thanks. To you, Jen.
Yeah, that's, I was just thinking about my life. And, you know, when I came into AA, certainly I definitely, when they talk about faith, I can say I for sure had faith in myself and in my own abilities, even when I was proven wrong, I still continued to have faith in myself and my abilities. So, you know, that's how strong my faith is. It's just, it's unfortunate because it's misdirected. And I think I saw a lot of that in my fourth, and basically my findings in my step four and ultimately my step five was that when I was pushing things, when I'm running the show, when I'm, you know, following my own script, things don't go well for me. And anytime, you know, looking back, and that's what step four does for me, as I get to look back and I get to look at, you know, my resentments and my fear and my sex inventory. And that's all where I run the show. That's all where Jen is. And it's interesting. I don't know. I was just thinking about this. I actually, it was Amy who sent me something, and I thought, that's so true. Like, I always thought that it was either, like, it was either going to be my will or God's will. I thought that that's what was happening, was that I was taking my will back, or I was exerting my will. And so that's why life went wrong for me. But I see it a little bit differently today. I see that I never had the choice. It's either going to be God's will or it's going to be my addiction. That's the only choice I have to make. My hand will always be holding something. The choice I get to choose is it going to hold the addiction or is it going to hold God's hand? And that's all I've got, because I can't, my will is really like, I look back on my fourth, I'm like, well, Christ, I never meant to do that to people. That's awful. Like I'm doing a fourth right now, and I'm hideously embarrassed and like just feeling so terrible. Thank God I've got my fifth all lined up. But anyways, you know, that is not who I am. I don't like to behave that way. That's just not who I want to be. And that's not who God wants me to be. But that is where my addiction and my alcoholic mind take me. And that's what I have to see here in the fourth, is where my alcoholic mind takes me. And it takes me a lot further. You know, the worst things on my fourth have nothing to do with drinking. Not a thing. You know, I always thought the worst stuff was, you know, when I slept with my best friend's boyfriend, oops, you know, when I, you know, drove drunk, oops, you know, and none of those things, that was not the things that I felt the most ashamed of and embarrassed of. You know, the shameful things were things like not remembering my mom's birthday. You know, not being able to call her because I was so hungover, not, you know, not being able to be a sister because I didn't know the job description. You know, I didn't have any of that. I love what Mike said. Like, I didn't know what I didn't know because I had, you know, for whatever the reason, like, I'm sure my mom and like my family were trying their best, but for whatever reason, it didn't stick with me. Like I didn't know about those job descriptions and anything like that. So, you know, when I came to do a step four, and I did it with someone who I came to trust, it was my sponsor. And she was, like I said, she found the chink in my armor. You know, at first I didn't trust anybody who came in, like that I came into AA. I haven't walked 5 minutes of road with you. Why would I trust you? That's stupid, you know? And so, and she knew that, she knew that she was dealing with, you know, a hot mess. And I'd tell her little things and then I'd wait to see if I heard it around the rooms. Bambi, I dyed my hair purple. let's just look around, see if anybody's talking about my purple hair. Nope, nobody's talking. Okay, I can trust her with a little bit more. And that's how that all went. And it took me a long time before I did my fourth. And I'm not recommending that, but, you know, I guess I was a little bit of an untrusting person. Anyways, thanks.
Thank you both. The next reading is also on page 68. Why would I screen share? That thing wants to just shoot down way too fast on me. It's kind of funny. All right, now about sex. Many of us needed an overhauling there, but above all, we tried to be sensible on this question. It's so easy to get way off track. Here we find human opinions running to extremes, absurd extremes, perhaps. One set of voices cry that sex is a lust of our lower nature, a base necessity of procreation. Then we have the voices who cry for sex and more sex, who bewail the institution of marriage, who think that most of the troubles of the race are traceable to sex causes. They think we do not have enough of it, or it isn't the right kind. They see its significance everywhere. One school would allow a man no flavor for his fare, and the other would have us all on a straight pepper diet. We want to stay out of this controversy. We do not want to be the arbiter of anyone's sex conduct. We all have sex problems. We'd hardly be human if we didn't. What can we do about them?
I even highlighted the one sentence in this paragraph that, thank goodness it's in there. It says we all have sex problems. Thank goodness. Because I was a mess. You know, I told you before, when I was in high school and scared to death, I never could even speak to a girl. Sex was something that was never going to happen. Then I found the magic. And then, you know, when I drank, I was so confident. I took risks that you just shouldn't take. I had no fear. I didn't think there were any consequences. And like Jen said, you know, this is something I didn't know then. I know it now. When I was in the midst of doing it, it was just me running wild, just getting what Mike wanted. You know, somewhere in the big book, it says, you know, she doesn't understand me. And I found someone that did. You know, my last summer, when I got kicked out for the last time out of my house, it was probably the fifth. We've been separated 5 times, my second wife, 4 times drunk, 1 time sober. And I was running the streets and she knew. She knew everything I was doing. My wife's a great spy. She had the phone tracking and she had the computer tracking and she had all this. And I was just caught with someone else. And I didn't care. And I hate saying that out loud. Look, I'm looking to see if the door's shut too, right? So I'm turning around, making sure, because she's down there, you know, but I didn't care. But try explaining that to your significant other, because all I was doing when I figured all this out was trying to find someone who could drink with me, because I was running this girl. I was running her into the ground, which is terrible. But everything that goes with it, sex and everything else. And I was just finding, I thought she could drink with me. And I was just finding that person that can drink with me. But go ahead and try explaining that to your significant other and go, sorry, it doesn't work. That doesn't fly. And that's just awful. It's terrible. And, but again, I'll go back to, I wasn't raised that way. My mom and dad have been married 59 years. They're still together. I've never heard a whisper of my mom or dad swaying, cheating, thinking about it. You know, maybe they did, you know, maybe they did. Maybe I don't know, but man, when I drank, I just drank my conscience away. You know, Jiminy Cricket's up here. He's gone. Forget him. I don't care. You know, I would drink my values away. I'd just go to oblivion and then I'd wake up. I'd wake up and go, oh, I feel terrible, blah, blah, blah. But I would feel terrible because I wondered if I had enough time to figure out those lies I was going to tell. And I wondered if I could figure out enough bullshit that I was going to throw so I wouldn't get in trouble, not knowing that that's fear and, you know, all those things that come with it. So I'm going to stop there because the next two paragraphs are pretty to me, pretty deep. So I'm going to just leave, you know, we all have sex problems right there.
Awesome. You, Jen.
All right. Yeah, I was part of that, the many that needed an overhauling there. I was one of those people. Very early on, I understood that I had some power and it had to do with how I looked. And I could use that power to get what I wanted. And I did. And, you know, I feel like, you know, we all have sex problems because sex problems have to do with relating. Well, not really the way I did it, but, you know, in a relationship, it has to do with relating. And I was never good at that. You know, I could make a good first impression, but couldn't really follow through with anything else. And I remember my sponsor, I was in a very big hurry. So when I got into Alcoholics Anonymous, I was in a very big hurry to get involved in a relationship. I felt like that would be the best thing for me. So I think I was like 3 weeks sober. I met an old timer who was like 6 weeks sober, and we quickly started dating. And then my one sponsor, thank God, my first sponsor from Australia basically said, you know, is this worth your life? And it was too scary. And I thought she was being a little overdramatic, but I listened to her and I'm glad I did. And basically, I made a pact with my sponsor that I was not going to get into a relationship until I had finished, until a year. That's what she said. Don't have a relationship for the first year. And so a year and one day later, I'm out stalking men in the program, of course. And I find this guy and then, you know, it doesn't go well. I'm saying to my sponsor, I'm crying and saying, how will I know if I ever find anybody? And thank God she, you know, because I didn't have a faith, a real active faith, but she did. And so she said to me, you know, don't settle for a skateboard when God wants to give you a teleporter. And I thought, oh, okay. And I said, but how do you know that he's not the teleporter? Like, how do I know that he's not the teleporter? And she's like, he's not even a skateboard. He's just a wheel rolling down the road. Like, you just have to let that go. And, you know, I mean, I didn't believe her. I didn't like what she was having to say. But we had spent so much time together that I was willing to give her the benefit of the doubt. And so I let that relationship go. And one of the things, thank God, that she had me do, and I, you know, it's not in the book, so feel free to, you know, not like it. But she asked me to write down a list of things that I really wanted in a man, in a partner. And so I did. I wrote down all the things I wanted in a partner. And then I said, okay, I'm done. And she said, great. Now, where are you on that list? You know, how I see that you said honest. How honest are you? How caring and compassionate are you? How willing are you? Oh, well, geez, I didn't know it was going to be about me. But that's the thing about this program, eh? I always want to think it's the outside. Things are wrong with the outside. We have sex problems. It's something wrong with you. What can we do to fix you? Or what can we do to fix us? But it's never me. And the thing is, if it's not me, then, you know, I'm in trouble, because as long as I'm the problem, then I can do some work on that. I cannot work on other people. I've tried. It doesn't work. I'm surprised. Nobody likes to be told what to do. Who knew? Okay, with that, I'll pass.
Thank you. All right. What am I doing here? There we go. Right. Our next reading is on page 69. We reviewed our own conduct over the years past. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate? Whom had we hurt? Did we unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? Where were we at fault? What should we have done instead? We got this all down on paper and looked at it. In this way, we tried to shape a sane and sound sex ideal for our future sex life. We subjected each relation to this test. Was it selfish or not? We asked God to mold our ideals and help us live up to them. We remembered always that our sex powers were God-given and therefore good, neither to be used lightly or selfishly, nor to be despised and loathed. Mike?
Yeah, when I was doing my fourth step and my sponsor was, you know, we went over this chapter, it hurts. I mean, this paragraph hurts and it still hurts to read it the other day when Amy asked me. Hurts, and I'm gonna tell you why it hurts. Because, and this is probably the one I'm gonna talk the most about. It was unbelievable. I didn't know, but that sounds so terrible now. You know, selfish every time. You know, I didn't care. I was gonna have fun. Sex was fun. Sex was good. Sex was exciting. You know. I have a 17-year-old son, and we've had to talk, and I've had to talk about it is fun, but there's consequences. There's you know, like Jen said, there's relationships. There's all kinds of things, warmth, touch, all that, and I didn't care. We were going to do it, and I was doing it when I was married twice, and it was selfish. It was pitiful, you know, and then I had to look at it like, you know, where it says dishonest, I wasn't just dishonest with my wife. I had to make amends to my friends who I would say, lie for me. You knew I was with you, right? When she calls, I was with you, right? And I'd expect them to say, yeah, Mike was here. Mike was with us the whole night, or, you know, he stayed at our house, blah, 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 blah. And I put them in that spot. I did every time. I didn't care. You're gonna look out for me. You're my friend. Inconsiderate. I could have brought any disease on this earth to someone, home to someone, got it from someone, and I didn't care. What's next? I never thought of that. You know, let's go. I don't care if, you know, AIDS, gonorrhea, pregnancy, I don't care. We're going. And then we'll worry about it later. And then I'd go home. What? What are you doing, man? And then the hurt was just my parents knew what I was doing. You know, they knew, you know, that's, they knew, they called me on it once. And I was like, that's not really what's happening. You know, the easiest people to lie to are the ones you love the most. Cause they'll believe your shit, you know? And I just, nah, mom, that's not right. But you know what really, really hurts is I have two adult daughters now. One's 30, one's 25. And they knew. They saw how their dad treated women. They saw it. And both of them to this day, and they've heard me, my wife and I talk about it. They have relationship problems with wanting to take care of their guys because they saw my wife take care of me. And that's how they thought things were done. You know, this alcoholism is this whole family thing, man. And they have it. They're not alcoholics, but they sure have problems with relationships. And they saw me. They saw how I treated people, even though I thought I was really slick and they didn't know anything. They were kids then. They sure as shit told me about it when, you know, and I made amends to them and they got to be adults and all that good stuff happens. And then here was my go-to. The last part says, arouse suspicion and jealousy. Man, I turned that so fast back on her. Dude, I'm not doing anything. You're cheating on me. I see cars out front. How do I come home after being out all night? there's maybe a strange car parked down the street. And I'm saying, you were cheating on me last night with that guy in that car. It could be anybody's car. But man, I turned that quick. You're not going to throw this at me. I'm going to throw this right back in your face. I didn't do anything wrong. I don't care what you thought. You're doing it wrong. You know, and that's, but here's where, and I couldn't believe this. Here's where I kind of got it. And I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe this came out of my mouth. I was asked one time to sit on this panel and talk about sex. And it was three people. And we were at a meeting of AA and we talked about it. And this kid, and I mean a kid, now I sound like an old man. This, and he said, he goes, I'm 21 years old and I'm just getting sober. And all I want to do is get laid. I'm looking at every girl in here and I'm trying not to drink, but that's what I'm trying to do. What do I do? And I just raised my hand. I said, buddy, let me tell you something. I said, when you figure out that sex is a lot more than that act, when you realize that doing something that you don't want to do, watch a TV show you don't want to do, buy flowers the day you just don't feel like it, you know, hold someone's hand just because, hug them when they're crying, you know, yes. And I did. And I said, dude, 21 sex is awesome. You know, I've said it to my 17-year-old son. I said, it is, you're going to love it. You know, woo, you're going to enjoy. But when you realize that it is about someone else, you're going to enjoy it and love it and feel it so much more. And like those words are coming out of my mouth and I'm looking around like, who the hell is this? Who is saying, where did that come from? And it's what I learned in AA, and it's what I learned when I turned it over. And it's what I learned when I realized this is not about Mike, any of it. I'm in a world of all these people, and I need to realize that Mike's not, because when I was doing all those other things, selfish, dishonest, inconsiderate, hurtful, jealous, it was all Mike, man. It was like, I don't care. Bring it on. And that's the words that came out of my mouth. And that's when I thought, hey, man, I might have this. I might understand a little bit. So thanks.
Thanks. You, Jen.
Okay. Well, right now I'm in the middle of doing a fourth and I've doing my sex inventory, and I thought it was going to be very uneventful because I'm married and I haven't had any extracurricular excursions. I've been sober. My husband's never seen me drink. Actually, here's the funny. So right before the meeting, I was looking at what we're going to talk about. And my husband came in, he's not an alcoholic. He's like one of those normal people. And he came in and he looked at my screen and he caught the word sex powers. And he said, what the hell are you talking about? And he goes, sex powers, what? God given. Anyway, he was just like, I don't get it. So I don't know what he thinks we're talking about here, but I imagine something along sex powers. But really what it is for me is that now I'm looking at that fourth step and that part of the fourth step and looking at people that I didn't have sexual relationships with. I've just, you know, but they belong on there because I was inconsiderate, dishonest, and selfish, and they don't have a resentment attached to them. I'm not resentful at those people. But I definitely caused, I was selfish, dishonest, and I said it before, but anyways, and I needed them to be on there because for me, all relationships, I have a problem with all relationships. It's not just sex. Sex just complicates it. You know, it just complicates it. I remember having, you don't know me, but I'll tell you, I'm someone who likes nature. When I'm at a five-star resort looking out, you know, with a window you know, between me and nature. And I like to look out while I'm getting a pedicure or a manicure, but I don't want to be in nature. That's just never interested me. And one of the things that has got me is that one of the things I found out while doing my sex inventory is that I morphed myself into who I thought you would be, who I thought you would like me to be. So you're really outdoorsy. Great. I love to camp, you know, and things would be great for a couple of months until, you know, I really start to show up because I can't pretend that long. And then they'd figure out like, wait a second, you don't like to camp. Like you're not at all the person who I thought you were. But by that time I'd wrap them into a relationship. Like, and this happened, this was like my go-to all the time. And when I came into AA and I got sober, that did not change. I was looking for a guy to take care of me, a rich man who could pay off my student debt would be best. Like those were, that was what I was looking for. That's what I would have aspired about. And then I met my husband when I was 5 years sober. And I remember this clearly because my sponsor told me that this eventually would happen and I never believed her. See, I always looked at relationships as to what I could get out of. What are you going to give me? Are you going to pay off my debt? Are you going to take care of me? What have you done for me lately? I love that line. What have you done for me lately? And when I met my husband, he likes, you know, a lot of loud noise. He calls it music. And I don't love it. And so, you know, he asked me to go to a concert with him. And for the very first time, I didn't want to, I said to him, I don't really like this, but I really want to see you happy. You see, for the first time, what brought me happiness was seeing him happy. It was what I could bring into the relationship. Like that's how transformative the 12 steps have been in my life, that I would go from someone who was purely looking out for myself and what I liked and what I wanted to now in a place. And Mike, you said it too, to giving back, to making it about a partnership, to wanting to see the other person happy, doing the things that make them happy. And it's not necessarily all about me. Like, you know, that's what I have to say about that. Thanks.
Thank you both. That was awesome. All right. So what are we at? 7:48. I'm going to read see what we've got here. All right. Wow. Sorry, I'm just seeing if I need to group. I'm going to try to group these last two together. Or wait, did I skip a reading? Or did we just read three? No, we just read the fourth one. I'm not going crazy, right, Jen? Okay, cool. I don't know why I'm getting mixed up here. All right, here we go. Also on page 69. All right. I'm going to just group these two together and then y'all just maybe sum up a couple of minutes if possible. Is that all right? All right. Whatever our ideal turns out to be, we must be willing to grow toward it. We must be willing to make amends where we have done harm, provided that we do not bring about still more harm in so doing. In other words, we treat sex as we would any other problem. In meditation, we ask God what we should do about each specific matter. The right answer will come if we want it. God alone can judge our sex situation. Counsel with persons is often desirable, but we let God be the final judge. We realize that some people are as fanatical about sex as others loose. We avoid hysterical thinking or advice. In the last reading on page 70, to sum up about sex, we earnestly pray for the right ideal, for guidance in each questionable situation, for sanity, and for the strength to do the right thing. If sex is very troublesome, we throw ourselves the harder into helping others. We think of their needs and work for them. This takes us out of ourselves. It quiets the imperious urge, when to yield would mean heartache. In this book, you read again and again that faith did for us what we could not do for ourselves. We hope you are convinced now that God can remove whatever self-will has you blocked off from him. If you have already made a decision and an inventory of your grosser handicaps, you have made a good beginning. That being so, you have swallowed and digested some big chunks of truth about yourself. Right, Mike?
Yeah. In the first reading, you know, that when we're writing these and we're not making amends yet. You know, it says, be willing to make amends provided we don't bring still more harm in doing so. I think this is kind of like a practice, not because you write it down and you have to be very careful with, in my opinion, with the sex amends, because what I found out is even when I did them and I did them honestly, I had to remember, and one of them came back, you know, is somebody might not accept this and that might not be happy with what I'm saying, you know, and I have to be willing and be on strong, strong spiritual footing that it's not hurting them. You know, I can't do that. That's been done. You know, I'm trying to somehow tell them where I was wrong in a kind and loving way that doesn't hurt. And sometimes it hurts and it's going to come back at me. And let me tell you the example I'm thinking of, because it hurt me to my core, but maybe it was needed to be. When I made amends to both my wives and all that. And then one time later, my wife now had this sheet, and I'm looking at the sheet and I go, what is that? And it was a sheet that was clean, perfectly clean on one side, and the other side was bloody and dirty. And I go, what the hell? What is that? She goes, that's your side of the bed, my friend, when you were drunk and you came home and just assumed sex was yours and I wanted it. And sometimes I gave it to you, sometimes we'd fight. And I was just like, probably didn't need that, but I probably did need that. You know, that's how much I hurt. I just assumed that's my wife. That's what we do. I was dirty. I was nasty. I was inconsiderate. I was filthy. And maybe I needed to see that and hear that, you know, because I'm a better person because of that, you know? And so remember, when you do these amends, be very careful. And I shouldn't say that. Do what your sponsor tells you to do, but remember, you're not trying to harm somebody else. And then in the last thing, I really, when I read this the other day, I thought this was so funny. It said, if sex is very troublesome, we throw ourselves the harder into helping others. So if you see a bunch of people, you know, setting up chairs and cleaning up cigarette butts and stuff, they're at meetings, they're probably just horny. So just laugh at them. You know, they're probably just, they're in trouble, but not really. And the last part, the main thing I think is, we read again and again what faith did for us that we couldn't do for ourselves. I think this is when it really took hold. I had to have a higher power to write this. I'm going to need faith to tell this to another person in my fifth step. I'm going to need the most faith I've ever had in my life in 6 and 7 to say, take this from me, because my life is going to change then. And then when I go make these amends, I'm really going to have to be sure that I'm on solid spiritual footing, that I'm not hurting somebody else, and that I know I need to go do these things, but I'm gonna talk to that higher power and have faith that they're gonna lead me in the right direction, not Mike just saying, whatever, sorry. You know, I'm gonna really go in there with, I was wrong, what can I do to make this right? So thanks.
Thanks, Mike. All you, Jan.
Okay. Yeah. You know, I feel as though, it just is. Practicing spiritual principles is just hard work. It's hard. And, you know, even in my own marriage, you know, the ideals that I set before myself coming out of the fourth and fifth was that I was going to live with integrity and be honest and open and compassionate and empathetic. And sometimes I rock those things. Sometimes I'm the best. And then other days I'm just getting by. And, you know, that's what step 10's for and step 11. And, you know, I'm not always perfect at those things. But, you know, I think what I take away, and it's an example, I was dating my now husband. And when we were dating, he was still married. No, now don't get all confused. It wasn't one of those complicated relationships. He had, you know, was separated for years and then he was going to get a divorce. And he was working on it. And so I said, okay, well, I'll continue to be with you as long as you're still working on getting your divorce. And a few months goes by and he hadn't talked about it. And so I sat down with him and I said, okay, well, where, you know, how are things going? How are things going with the divorce? And he said, I haven't really done anything. And this is where for me, you know, the rubber hit the road. And I could no longer have dishonest relationships or any of that in my life. And I said, okay, then you need to leave. You need to leave because I'm not willing to walk one more mile of road with you. And, you know, he heard that and got a divorce and we're happily married and have three children. So I'm not saying, you know, out of all the relationships, it was only that one person who did that. So, yeah, you know, for somebody, my friend Brian used to say, you know, Jen, you're a pretty girl, but you got a bad picker, your picker's off. And I get that, man. Like I had a completely awful picker. And you know, it took coming to AA and going through the steps and doing a step four and a step five and all of those steps to find some peace around my relationships, not just sex and not just, but every single relationship I found peace. And, you know, I'm not looking over my shoulder and I don't live with that football in my gut anymore. And, you know, those are the promises and I'm glad I stuck around for them because, man, I would have sold myself short if all I did was stay sober. Thanks.
Thank you both so much for an awesome meeting. For real. That was great. I'll let everybody unmute at the end and thank our awesome speakers tonight. I put the PayPal link in the chat if you would like to donate. The seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their inner group, central office, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Our common welfare, a word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meetings can take place. Are there any AA-related announcements? I can take a quick one and you can unmute if you have one. All right, I don't see anybody with their hands. I will say that District 14 is hosting a concepts workshop, doing one concept a month, corresponding with said month. This month will be concept two. We'll have Dave H. From Virginia Beach will be speaking on concept two, and the date for that will be Wednesday the 24th. You can get the Zoom info on tidewaterintergroup.org. Right. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Will all home group members please raise their hands? Right. Sponsorship questions. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, we will be available here in the Zoom room after the meeting. Please feel free to talk to any of us. And if you're shy, feel free to send an email to info@simpleactions.net. In closing, thanks to all who participated. I will unmute everybody after the Lord's Prayer, and you will say thank you to our awesome speakers tonight. Could I get Mike F. to read the last two paragraphs on page 164?
Certainly.
Awesome. I will throw that up now. Right. There you go.
All right. Hey, everybody. I'm Mike. I'm an alcoholic. A Vision for You, Big Book, page 164. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Thanks,
Mike. All right, we'll close it up with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen. Thank you both. I will.
Thank
you. Everybody can unmute, right?
Thanks, Jen. That was fantastic.
Great job, Ken. Thank you, Mike.
Thanks, Amy.
That was awesome. Thank you both.
Thank you, guys. Jen, it was nice meeting you.
It was nice meeting you too, Mike.
That was fun. It was. I guess.